Oh, and a little bit of salt, I could tell at the end.
I was a Bulls fan for 3 years, and even now that still gives me goosebumps.
Welcome, everyone, to the Final Play Podcast. It's been a while because, unfortunately, there's not enough sport around, or I should say there's no sport around at all.
I was going to say it's been a long time. We shouldn't have left you.
left you. But we thought because of sports and because it's probably one of the most hyped documentaries of this, of any documentary this year, not just sports documentary, we'd look at recapping an ESPN documentary shared with Netflix, actually, called The Last Dance, which was pretty much centered around the final season of the Chicago Bulls, last title run, their sixth title run.
The 97-98 season.
Yeah.
Pretty much there was a mass exodus of everybody after that.
And basically, it ended up being Michael that allowed it might have been just Chicago, but basically that final year they allowed Crew to follow him for the entire season. So
yeah, over 500 hours of film footage that they actually sort of had to run through for that documentary. So that was that was pretty crazy, and I'm pretty sure Mike went through. I think he had to have gone through the lot, to sort of not so much supervise what they could put in and what they couldn't. But he basically said, nah, this is 100% all access. Nothing's out of bounds. So what's in the documentary it was all basically approved, by the great one.
And I think he was holding on to it for years, if I remember. I think.
Well, it's been 22 years. So.
But he owns the rights, and as from what I've read, he does own the rights, and I think he was just holding on to it for, I'm not sure why, but for the perfect time. I did hear a little rumor, I don't know how true it is, that he had decided to at least look into releasing it when LeBron James came back and won his championship at the Cleveland Cavaliers.
I'd heard those little birds whispering about that too. Well, they started sort of the looking and the editing process in like 2018, so more than 2 years ago, and it was supposed to be it was almost going to be a year-long project to do this anyway. And the director of it, Jason Eyre, he's done some good stuff for ESPN. He was the director of the Andre the Giant documentary that came out not that long ago. He's done ESPN films. He's done the Fab Five, which is awesome. I love the Fab Five ESPN films. He's done 30 for 30 docos. He's done the 85 Bears doco, Down in the Valley, Bernie and Ernie. So he's done UFC, he's done UFC stuff. He's got good credentials, and he was basically handpicked by Mike to be the director of this.
And saying that, it's just come out the other day, just speaking of the doco, is that Kobe Bryant had a personal film crew follow him around for his last season. So
that'll be.
That's
interesting that sort of come out around now as well. It's one of the most hot documentaries that's come out for a while. Like ESPN, it's set like an ESPN record. It averaged like 6.1 million views. The first episode averaged more, and then it tailed off in that second episode, because it started at 9 p.m. Eastern time over in the States. So by the time it sort of got into the second episode, it was 10 o'clock, and it's on a Sunday night. So, the U.S. is sort of semi in lockdown, I guess. So some people would have had to have gone to work on the Monday. Obviously, it probably wouldn't have mattered too much for people on the West Coast, because that would have been a nice 6 p.m. 6 p.m. start, so it wouldn't have mattered too much on the West Coast. But yeah, just blew up numbers.
Yeah, well, the next closest was 1.2 million. I can't remember what it was, but that was the next closest. The old football one, I can't remember what, but it was like 1.2 million. So, yeah, it was.
Is that the Michael Vick one?
Oh, no, I don't think it was that. I'm pretty sure it wasn't that. Well, maybe it was. I don't remember.
I think that was one of the more sort of hyped new 30 for 30s that they brought out, was out of this new crop. Of 30 for 30s that they brought out, because it was two parts.
Oh, okay, interesting.
The Michael Vick one, yeah. I think it was the highs, and then the dizzying lows as well, and his comeback, you know, to the Eagles and stuff like that. So it was I've only seen bits and pieces of it, but yeah, it's she's a pretty wild docker, that one.
Well, so this is a 10-part series. They're going to release it in two episodes each week. We're going to recap, I guess, the first two episodes each week and, yeah, go over them and give you our thoughts. Start with the first episode.
Episode one, they sort of – it's I guess these first two episodes, I'm guessing, are mainly sort of setups. So the first episode sort of gone through the press conferences at the start of the season. You know, I guess what their sort of goals and expectations were. They'd sort of come out and Michael had sort of come out and said, you know, that they've earned the right to defend what they've won in the season before. So yeah. Basically, yeah, they'd won five championships in 7 years. The year and a half hiatus of Michael when he went and played baseball, he come back for in that 90, he missed the entire 93-94 season and most of the 94-95 season. He come back and he played 14 games at the back end of that season. Like the Bulls made the playoffs, but they ended up getting beaten by the Orlando Magic in that season. Funnily enough, the Orlando Magic made the NBA Finals in that 94-95 season and then proceeded to get swept by the Houston Rockets. If anybody out there you want to watch that 30 for 30, Jordan Rides the Bus, which basically takes you through him retiring after that third championship in 1993, and then yeah, goes through his journey with baseball and then his comeback and everything. So that's a really good watch as well.
So yeah, like you said, this was a setup of how the doco was going to play out. It was interesting. It started off like we sort of all thought it was started off. It explained that why they were following him around. Basically, they all knew it was up. Like Phil Jackson knew it was, you know, apparently he was talking to Jerry Krause, the general manager, that I think that name's on everybody's lips now, Jerry Krause.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The prime villain of this documentary.
He basically come out and said that it was always going to be Phil Jackson's last year. And apparently Phil said, he told him, he goes, I don't care if you win 82 games in a row. This is going to be your last year. Obviously, then that filters down to, you know, your Michael Jordans, your Scottie Pippins and that. And Scottie already had an incredibly bad terms with Jerry Krause, which we'll touch on later.
He was not very fond of him, and that relationship only, by the sounds of it, only gets worse throughout this season, this 97-98 season. It deteriorates very quickly. And it only gets worse. But it's just the funny headline too that they'd sort of come out straight up and said, you know, could Michael Jordan be driven out of basketball?
Yeah.
I thought that was a sort of interesting way how they'd sort of started off, and that's how the media had come out and, you know, before the season had even started. You know, when they're having their introductory press conferences to start the season. And yeah, like you said, you know, it took a long time for Phil Jackson to actually get his deal done. So he got a $6 million 1 year deal for this last season.
Just hearing that's just more than what Scottie Pippen was making, but we'll talk about that later too.
That's a third of his contract. Anyway, yeah, we'll go into that. We'll go into that.
So I found it interesting when Jerry Krause came out and sort of said this, and all the uncertain. Scottie Pippen was looking at uncertain terms. Michael Jordan was. Phil Jackson definitely was. Do you think then they've ordered to have the crew in to come in, or was this already pre-planned? Because it's just highly coincidental, or just very good timing that has happened.
I think it does seem extremely coincidental, but they would have had to have gotten permission. Like, surely that they would have had to have gotten permission by the team, not so much just by the people, like the team as well, because management, I'd say by the end of this, are not going to look like very nice people. Not so much the owner, Jerry Reinsdorf, and we'll sort of touch on him a little bit later too, as it regards to Scottie Pippen. Yeah. Yeah, the Scottie Pippen contract and everything, but he's hired Jerry Krause, and even before this, Jerry Krause was named Executive of the Year and all that sort of stuff. pulled off the biggest heist of the start of the 95-96 season, where the Bulls won 72 games, and trades to get Dennis Rodman. Dennis Rodman is traded for Will Perdue.
That's the biggest heist
of the year.
I know we'll talk about how bad this guy is later, but I will say full credit to him to get this team together. Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, Tony Kukoc, Steve Kerr. Like, there's he got the team together. Not the other guys. So.
No, that's right. Yeah, and they had the right role players. They had guys like Bill Wennington, Randy Brown, Judd Bushler, who we used to laugh at.
Yeah, Judd Bushler. We caught a lot of people back and forth.
In this series, they had guys like Scott Burrell. Jason Caffey. They had some really good role players and who wouldn't want to be a John Sally was on this team. Yeah, he was part of the Bad Boy Pistons, the same as Dennis Rodman. So he's made some shrewd moves to get these guys there, whether it's through the draft or whether it's through free agency or trade.
And so what happened basically, Phil Jackson sounds like every year he has a title for what the year's going to be. And coincidentally, this year was called The Last Dance because it was going to be his last dance there. So,
well, his last dance there. We all know the Phil Jackson track record after that. but that's what they sort of outlined as well. I think it might have been Bill Wennington. That says throughout the doco, he's on the heaps in this first couple episodes.
You brought him up before. Where the hell do they pull Bill Wennington from, firstly? And secondly, how come he's on there so much? Maybe he's well spoken.
His role might be a bit limited as the documentary goes on, but he's in this everywhere. But yeah, he was basically the one that sort of elaborates on what The Last Dance mean and enjoy what's happening. Now and in the moment, because this is very much pointing towards this is going to be the last dance for a lot of people on this team. Obviously players and coaches had careers and still play games after this, but Bill Wennington, he's everywhere. I love it. It's the first episode sets up, Jordan, he's born in New York. Like, he's a native New Yorker. They moved down to Wilmington, North Carolina. So that's where sort of his ties come to from there.
Yeah.
And him being cut from, I think it's the is it called the Laney High School? The high school Laney team high he gets school. Cut.
Mind you, that whole side, and that when the Laney people come on, they all had Jordan brand gear on, by the way. So
they're basically in blood.
And then it pushed to sort of preseason before it went back to flashback to Jordan. We pushed to preseason in Paris. And I think they were the first team to have that exhibition trip in Paris, or at least sort of look of it because they were so
big. They played like one game. That was it. What a waste of a trip.
Wow.
Like, it would have been nice. Well, that's what I mean. But you know what I mean? Like, you'd think you'd go over there and maybe play like a French All-Stars team and maybe get, you know, maybe get like, you know, a Spanish team or something, you know, some more Euro League teams to come to France and have a couple of games. They played one game.
But it was, I mean, it didn't matter because it could tell even from everything that was happening there, it was just Michael Jordan. Like, no one wanted to see anybody else. He came on that night show and some guy asked for his autograph and he just dissed it.
He just totally disrespected him.
That was the best.
One of the blinders there is just like, oh, sorry, he doesn't do that. But everybody would have been excited for that. But he was a media guy and apparently, they just said, he doesn't do that for media people. Like, he signs autographs for the kids and fans and stuff. But this was a media guy and he's just flatly refused. It's like, oh, ouch.
And then it went a flashback to when, just I guess looking before he was drafted to the Chicago Bulls at 1984, I believe. It was
84.
Back when I think
the very famous draft.
Back when, well, yeah, well, we'll touch on it now because back when Chicago, I think the biggest they were behind the Chicago Sting indoor soccer team was drawing more fans than they were. Literally
That's
drawing
insane.
More. Which is absolutely insane.
Well, it's true. You know, Chicago was never a big basketball city.
Oh.
It was, you know, the Chicago Bears. You know, everybody loved the Chicago Bears in the NFL. If you're a North Side fan for baseball, you're a Chicago Cubs. If you're a South Side Chicago, Chicago native, then you're Chicago White Sox. It just wasn't a big. Yeah, it just wasn't a big thing, basketball in Chicago. And, you know, they were a fledgling team. Yeah, I think they'd only made about two or three playoff appearances in their first 15 years or whatever it was. I think they started off as the Chicago Stags before they changed their name to the Chicago Bulls. So, but yeah, they were just one of those franchises that were just it's the second of, now it's the second or third biggest market in the NBA.
It is. It's Chicago, so it's in. Again, going back to they weren't that big. Like Chicago itself is one of the biggest cities in the U.S. So it's interesting how terrible. Well, I mean, baseball was pretty big back then too, I suppose.
Well, they had two teams there, so that takes up the summer, and then everybody focused on the Chicago Bears. So it's there was just, I guess they just didn't have time for basketball.
So yeah, cue the 1984 draft, which, like you just said, was probably one of the biggest
famous or infamous. Oh, I'm not sure.
Well,
it depends on your perspective.
So to me, I have said it to everybody that I've talked to this about. You couldn't pass up Hakeem Olajuwon as number one.
No, absolutely not.
They needed a center. They had Clyde the Glide. That's the second pick. First pick, you couldn't pass up Hakeem.
Houston had Ralph Sampson there as well, you couldn't pass up the Dream. You just couldn't.
No. But number two pick, and this is where they had Clyde the Glide Drexler.
That's right. Portland had the number two pick. They had Clyde. He plays the exact same position as Jordan. He was just as good. He was just as good as what Mike was in college. Like he played for the Houston Cougars team. That's Fire Slammer Jammer. they were an unbelievable college team. So they went with, you know, the thing was back in the day that you just don't win championships with guys like Michael Jordan as your number one guy. You win championships with a big man. So they took Sam Bowie.
Sam Bowie. Which, oh my God, which is interesting. It wasn't so much that I knew they weren't going to pick Michael. I'm very surprised how far Charles Barkley fell in that draft.
That's
very,
right.
Very surprised.
That's right.
Who I thought was going to go number two. I mean, obviously, I was 3 years old, but I thought, looking back on it, I thought, okay, Charles sort of makes sense.
That's right. When you recap, that draft, like even so, like, you know, obviously, you know, hindsight is fantastic, and anybody but Sam Bowie would have been better to pick there. But yeah, it's, as I said, it's one of the most infamous sort of number two / busts in NBA history, because we all know who was picked number three.
So, yeah, Michael went number three. A couple of big notes. Yeah, like I said, Charles went from Philly at number five. Alvin Robertson went number seven.
It was a damn good draft.
John Stockton was in there at number 16. So, it was a pretty decent draft.
Yeah.
Kevin Willis, Atlanta. He played 21 seasons. My God.
Oh, man. Kevin Willis was there. He was evergreen, man. He played for... Boy, did he play for everybody by the end of his career. But you sort of remember Kevin Willis for the Heat and, yeah, mostly the Atlanta Hawks. But, Kevin Willis, one of those early guys who was an amazing rebounder back in the day as well.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Like, everyone keeps going on. There was no way they were going to pick Michael Jordan at number two, Portland. And to me, Hakeem was always going to be number one. So I know, but a lot of people just, every time I hear it, they go, oh, well, Portland should have picked him number two. If they did, how do you play him and Drexler?
Impossible. These days, where there's a little bit more innovation in the game, you would have been able to do it. Like, absolutely, you know, when you're picking that high in the draft, you pick the best player available. That's the philosophy now. If you don't pick a position that you need, essentially. If you're picking, you know, top five, top six, you pick the best available player and you work from there. You have to try and be innovative, and you work in how, even if you've got to double up in that same position of young guys, you just work it out.
So he gets drafted by Chicago Bulls. As soon as I seen that, the first time he's come into preseason, the biggest thing that I read that came out of that was a traveling cocaine circus.
Traveling cocaine circus is one of the best lines of the first two episodes.
And he knew about it.
But that's right. Yeah. I mean, he knew about it. He tells us. Yeah, you know, scouts honor that he didn't participate in any of that, and players have come out as well and said that he didn't drink. You know, they said no, orange juice and 7-Up.
7-Up was his go-to.
It was his pick of choice. So yeah, he just had that drive. And that's sort of come from his family too. You know, his father sort of pushed him fairly hard as well. It's just the way that come across. Michael just pisses himself laughing when he hears that line. I don't think that's something that's not uncommon with basketball fans. So much knew about that, but you know, there'd been stories and that around that. Yeah, there was definitely some untoward things happening. Especially not just in that team, but in the NBA.
I think we both sort of agreed that, I think it was the third game that it ended up being Michael Jordan's team up until that third game. Was it third game, I think?
A lot of the team, like they knew by the end of preseason that MJ was the best player on the team.
Yeah.
So they just had to wait for him, and they basically come out and said, you know, he earned his stripes in the third game of the season, when they played the Milwaukee Bucks. And, you know, they had a guy called Sidney Moncrief, a two-time defensive player of the year, and he just goes out there and absolutely scorches him. So it's, all right, this kid's for real. Okay, he's 21, but, you know, this kid, he's for real. And the hype grew quick. The Chicago Bulls became, you know, the number one thing in Chicago once they
really
started to
quick.
Get, yeah, so yeah, so once they started to get a sniff of this Michael Jordan, it just blew up. They must have just been absolutely clamoring for basketball to be big, and he's the next big thing that was coming along, and it was pretty clear Obviously he was going to win Rookie of the Year. It wouldn't have mattered what sort of a year the Dream had. His rookie year stats are ridiculous. Like 28 points, 6 assists, 6 rebounds.
Yeah.
Like as a rook.
As a rookie.
Like, get it. Everything that they would have had to have fed him a lot because he was the only guy that was going to be doing a lot. But those numbers are just that's generally what happens when you go that high in the draft. And if you're a good enough player, you're going to get pretty good numbers because most of the time you're going to be on a bad team.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty evident after that third game. Yeah, they not only was going to get Rookie of the Year, but just those stats for rookies, it's just unheard of. Wow.
It's not so much as nowadays.
Yeah.
No, that's especially back then. But that's, I mean, even nowadays, like that would still be an extremely impressive mark, with the offensive explosion of the NBA at the moment. But for a rookie to average 28 points per game, in a league back then that was dominated by the big man. Mm. And he just went, I don't care. He just took that drive. And he wasn't going to be stopped by anybody. Like, he grew up and come through the NBA just in with an absolute plethora of Hall of Fame centers and big men. And yeah. he just took no prisoners. It didn't bother him at all.
The other couple of things I took out of that was when they went back to the new, North Carolina days. And obviously not only that, what was it, like 60,000 plus crowd for that NCAA final game, which was at the Georgia Dome?
At the Superdome in New Orleans.
Superdome, which is unheard to me. I don't remember a big, like back then, I don't remember seeing a big crowd like that. But that was, Michael Jordan versus Patrick Ewing too back then.
No, that's right.
And it was James Worthy was the biggest player on that side, because I'm pretty sure it was, wasn't a setup. He was never going to get that final shot until it sort of had to.
Well, that's back then as well. Like, you have a look at the court. There's no 3-point line and there was no shot clock.
Yeah, true.
So all they were doing was just, that for the last 2.5 minutes, all they were going to do was just pass the ball around and wait until pretty much the last second. And they couldn't help it. That shot came with about 28 seconds left in the game. That Michael Jordan shot, just flawless. Yeah, he was open and he took it. It was just a quick switch of play back over to the left side, mid range jumper, which Michael just made his own. Like that mid range game, he was out of control. Like it just.
Yeah.
To have that and to be as efficient as what he was in that mid-range game is extremely hard to do, because they just don't do it in the NBA now because it's such a hard thing to do. But that jumper was flawless. Gets Dean Smith an NCAA title. Yeah, he was the coach there. Obviously Roy Holiday, he was an assistant back then. He obviously coaches UNC now. But there, they just said that his willingness and his drive was out of this world.
He jumped so high in that game winning shot that I got to see a good shot of those 1984 Converses back then.
Oh yeah,
they were so good. they were like just ridiculous.
Those all stars, they were beautiful. like you said, the man on that team was James Worthy.
Yeah.
He was the man.
He was the man.
And then he has the quote at the during the doco. It's like, I was better than Michael. I was better than him for 2 weeks.
2 weeks. You mentioned Dean Smith. That was the other thing I took on before that the first episode, is that to me, normal circumstances, a coach doesn't tell a player, if he's that good, he could have told Michael Jordan to stay back and play another year in North Carolina. He has actually insisted Jordan to go pro, which is pretty rare.
Yeah, you go.
So that is the kind of coach you want. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. He'd already had the three years there. And he basically met with him and he said, nah, you go, boy. You go make that money. You go take those talents to the NBA.
And I don't think, because he was so comfortable there, he was conflicted. It wasn't just about the money. Right. He was very conflicted. So.
And he also says too, like that they had interviews with him. I think it might have been after a couple of weeks of that first season that he had with Chicago. And yeah, there's an interviewer that says, oh, you know, how do you think you're going, fitting into the NBA? And MJ's just come straight and said, oh no, I think it's pretty easy. Like, yeah, I think I'm coming along well. It's like, holy crap, dude. Yeah, this is a pretty easy transition, you know, college born to the NBA. This is nothing.
So while the episode one pretty much set the stage for The Last Dance, episode two homed into some important secondary characters, I thought, namely Mr. Scottie Pippen.
Well, that's right. They sort of segue into the second episode of, how Scottie Pippen comes into the mix. 1987, yeah. Chicago have the fifth pick. Scottie Pippen goes in the fifth pick. Chicago makes a trade with the Seattle Supersonics.
He had no idea.
No, that's right. He was signing his contract and he had his Seattle Supersonics hat on.
Yeah.
And they said, you're about to be traded to the Chicago Bulls. Now, here's just a little something I'll throw at you. Do you remember the player that he was traded for?
I was trying to I should have backtracked and I was going to look and I completely forgot. So, nah.
It was a player by the name of Olden Polonese.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I had a funny feeling that's who it was, and I just had to go back and check and just recheck to make sure that, yes, it was Olden Polonese that was the guy. And plus, it was a future pick as well.
I was going to say, it had been a pick in there somewhere, surely.
It should have been multiple picks. That's basically who the two teams had agreed to trade each other for.
Sorry, I was going to say again, Jerry Krause, he seen Scottie Pippen and he liked it. So, I mean, I know he's a villain and we're going to touch on it soon, but still, it's just...
Well, that's the thing. Scottie Pippen, you know, he had to work. He had to work his butt off to try and get into... He was at Central Arkansas. He had to work his butt off to try and get himself a scholarship. Like, he was just in and around the team. Yeah. Apparently they'd lost some players in the I think they might have graduated. A few scholarship spots come up. They end up giving Scotty a scholarship. And between his freshman and sophomore year, he grew 5 inches.
5 inches, yeah.
What the hell is that?
That is absolutely ridiculous. Just imagine walking back in preseason and you've grown 5 inches. Like, that is absolutely insane.
And like he said too, he wanted to model his game off Dr. J.
Yeah.
And you can see even when he's playing in college, you can see the extreme similarities between Dr. J's game and Scottie Pippen's game. You could see that he was molding himself in that mold of being a player like Dr. J. He was just so lengthy and long. Like, that was part of it as well. He had an insane wingspan for somebody who ended up being 6'7". I think he had like a 7'1" wingspan.
But then he started to put on. Yeah, you're right. But then I noticed he started to put on a bit more muscle towards the end of that before he got drafted too, because he was lanky.
He was very lean.
There was no meat in those bones. Lean. So yeah, he goes to Chicago. The first thing that I noticed straight away, which is hilarious, is he obviously had to fight, you know, when you're a rookie, you usually get that hazing sort of thing. And Charles Oakley just slapped him.
Oh, man, Charles Oakley just owned him.
Oh, my God. just slaps him for no reason. And you can tell Pippen was like, it's all good, but he didn't like it.
He he's a little bit apprehensive with it. He's just like, what the hell is this?
That could have broke someone, really.
Well, that's right. Yeah, that just sort of goes to show that the character of Scottie Pippen and like, but both Michael and Scottie really grew sort of fond of Charles Oakley on that Chicago Bulls team, and then he ends up being traded to the Knicks. I guess that's sort of where the seeds were planted on the disenchantment between Scottie and Michael and upper management, because they were very, very fond of Charles Oakley.
Very fond of Charles Oakley. So that was probably the start of Jerry Krause's villainous, so to speak.
Yeah, I guess so.
I think it's a certain little things.
They were trading for a piece that they needed. Like they needed a big man. I just can't think of who the center was that they traded for the Knicks to trade Charles Oakley over to New York. And that they were basically, it's a business. So they were trying to get people that were going to fit the team.
Yeah. Yeah, they were. So it was, as a business sense, you're right. It completely made sense. But I don't think, obviously, that was I don't know. Like, so we keep saying Jerry Krause the villain because Jerry Krause is...
Well, you're not doing your job. You're not doing your job if you're an executive and you're liked by everybody. Like, that's just how it goes. Like, it's a business. He's running it as a business. Yeah. And it just so happens that it's just annoying some of the... some of the best players at the game scene.
And Michael Jordan called it he had a short man syndrome. that was the thing. Another thing that came out of that second episode, I felt hilarious when they were getting their rings, and he said, "Jerry, you going to do some laps? We might have to lower that hoop for you."
Yeah, we'll lower the hoop for you.
Oh, just little pranks. It was hilarious.
Yeah, just little digs, just little. That's, it's all fun. It's all fun, but yeah, I think there might have been a little bit of I think he's totally enjoying that.
During that bit, Michael came out and said, obviously Scottie Pippen was his greatest teammate out of all time, but he also said whenever they say Michael Jordan, they should be saying Scottie Pippen, because that's
the second best line in the first two episodes, like the second best quote. When they speak Michael Jordan, they should speak Scottie Pippen.
Pippen.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately for Scottie Pippen, I guess he didn't. He must have had either he had the worst agent, or I don't know what happened, but he.
I'm not sure if he just we're going on the contract. I'm not sure if he believed in himself.
I don't think so either. Oh look, he said, and he still stands by it. He did say. He just wanted to provide for his family.
That's right.
Jerry Krause, this is an 18-year-old.
He come from a big family too. His dad was in a wheelchair. His brother was in a wheelchair. Yeah. It's one of those situations where, he is absolutely 100% thinking of his family first and not himself. Which is obviously very admirable, but. That contract that he signed, brutal.
So seven years, $18 million. Now,
and Jerry Reinsdorf come out and said, "You're selling yourself short. Don't sign this contract."
Yes, and don't I think Jerry Krause said the same thing too. He said, "Basically, if you sign this, don't come back and ask for more money."
That's right.
These days, that just doesn't happen because you know people renegotiate their contracts all the time. So
or they'll force a trade.
That's the thing I didn't like about Jerry Krause. It's not so much he didn't make Scottie sign that contract, but that he could have came to him as a man or just as an executive of when we talk about his stats in a second and say, okay, I you really deserve this amount of money for the next 3 years.
You are providing us a terrific service, and we think you deserve an upgrade and a pay rise.
Because surely they would make, I mean, you know, salary cap alone, which did blow out around then, they were making, surely they were making so much money off not only the games, but Michael Jordan jerseys, like, you know. That's right. So,
yeah.
Because when the ESPN broke the stats down later, so he was 122nd highest paid player in the NBA in 97-98.
That's crazy.
He was first on the Bulls in assists and steals, second on the Bulls in scoring, rebounds, and minutes played, but sixth on the Bulls in the salary.
Sixth in salary. So that means there's a starting lineup that is getting paid more than what he is. That is truly insane.
Who's possibly the second best player, not only second best player on the Bulls, but certainly the second best player in the NBA at that time too, quite possibly.
Well, around that time, I think players like Karl Malone and Hakeem Olajuwon and guys like that would probably have something to say about that, because I'm pretty sure Karl Malone is coming off an MVP year. So I wouldn't go that crazy, but okay, he's definitely top five or top ten. He's definitely, you know, one of those top guys in the league for sure.
So obviously,
the funny thing is too, I did a little bit of digging around about that after that as well. His next five seasons, he had one with Houston and four with Portland. He made $77 million.
Okay, which doesn't get mentioned.
Yeah. That's right, he got paid.
Yeah.
So
did he go in those seasons? Actually, now just bringing that on.
Well, he's part of that Portland team that had that amazing series against the 2000 LA Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. Scottie Pippen's on that team, and he's still playing pretty good.
Yeah, okay.
He had one year with Houston, and four with the Portland Trail Blazers, and those contracts in that 5 years were $77 million. So, yeah, he eventually got paid. And I guess that was always going to happen, and that would have been way above market value for what he would have been providing, because obviously he would have been on longer legs, you know, heavier legs than what he would have been when he was playing with Chicago. But that's what the experience comes with having Scottie Pippen as well. So
I knew the guy was tall, and I knew the guy was jacked. Like he was a big guy, but goddamn, I didn't realize how hard he could dunk the ball. I forgot no one talks about him and dunking. Like it's not like a, you know, goddamn, he dunks the ball ferociously.
He used to abuse that rim.
I forgot, like literally, because you don't hear about you know NBA dunks and you know all that. You don't hear Scottie Pippen.
Well, it's you see players like Russell Westbrook these days that just absolutely, they've just got a vendetta against that hoop. But back then, Scottie Pippen, he looks like he was pretty pissed off at it too.
So he came into that 97-98 campaign, obviously, you know, not lack of a new deal, but constant trade rumors as well were swirling around.
That's right. At the end of that championship season in 96-97, there was rumors swirling straight up around that management were looking at trading him.
I heard a T-Mac rumor, a T-Mac trade rumor. And I'm saying back then, I dug deep into it, that T-Mac was going to the Bulls.
Oh, my God.
That was like, if you have a look, I looked into it when they said trade rumors and trade swirls. So I had a look into it, and that was a possibility of Scotty going to Orlando.
Wow.
T-Mac and Michael Jordan.
Grief.
I think they're too similar. I don't think that would have worked personally, but.
Oh, no, T-Mac would have still been at Toronto, wouldn't he?
Was it Toronto or was that Orlando? No, it might have been at Toronto.
He still had a couple of years at Toronto before he went to Orlando.
So that was one of the trade rumors, which would have been insane back then anyway. And this is young Tracy McGrady, so very young.
Oof.
He had foot problems and could have done what most people do, or most players do, I should say, and that had to have surgery during preseason or off season. He's decided to have the foot surgery just before the new season began. So
it's signed
on until January.
That's a very interesting decision by Scotty to do that.
basically an FU to the management. I think that was
pretty much a big screw you. Like you said, you know, he's very disheartened by management and what they're doing, and especially like we said, you know, with all the trade rumors and everything swirling around. So yeah, it was a ruptured tendon in his ankle.
That he had.
So yeah, he put it off. Nobody had any real sort of animosity towards him for delaying the surgery. You know, he'd earned that respect in the locker room that, you know, he's doing what's best for him. So yeah, and that's the story of the locker room as well. You know, you couldn't go after Scotty for doing what he's doing.
No, I don't think. I mean, yeah, again, it was an FU, and you could hear him on the bus to Jerry Krause. Jerry Krause was sitting at the front, and God, you could just, every time like he was around Jerry Krause, he was teeing off at him big time.
He was right into him, and I mean, he was still traveling with the team.
He must have had
a lot of time to be sort of sitting around thinking, doing a bit of rehab, and just going, look, the hell with this guy. And yeah, there's bits that they talk about in the doco that he's basically saying, yeah, even Michael's come out and saying, like, you know, do you just need to calm down a little bit? Like, we're only just getting this 82 game season up and running. And you can't be sort of, you know, doing this to start this season off this early. Like, we just need to settle down a little bit. We need to get into our groove. You know, obviously he's not going to be there for the first part of the season. So they're lacking that skill there. You know, Dennis Rodman's pretty much the only guy that he can trust. And you know, you can't trust Dennis to sort of put up the numbers that Scotty's doing.
No.
You know, Dennis is going to be Dennis. He's going to defend his ass off, and he's going to rebound, but he's not going to be able to give you 22 points a game.
What I found interesting is that Phil Jackson seemed that when he was in the doco along with Scotty, obviously, Phil Jackson was okay with Pippen's actions doing it. Jordan, on the other hand, pretty much criticized him and said he was wrong in that scenario. And that's because obviously Jordan wanted to win. But I just found that interesting, Phil Jackson as a coach.
But that comes down to Jordan's drive. He knows what's got to be done.
Yeah.
He's just like, we've still got the opportunity here to we can win another championship. Like we're not going to throw this away. You know, and it's like you said, you know, it all comes down into hindsight, and they sort of segue off Scotty a little bit and go back into Michael a little bit, because, you know, like we said, you know, Scotty had that ruptured tendon in his ankle to start the season.
Yeah.
Jordan, at the start of the second season that he played in 85-86.
Segue beautifully to that. Yeah.
In the third game against the Warriors, Golden State Warriors. Just landed awkwardly and broke a bone in his left foot. So he ends up missing 64 games of that season.
It's
funny how that works. You know, he has the unbelievable rookie season. You know, he would have come into that season with just a huge amount of hype, and third game into the season, gone.
And he could have ended his career, because he didn't handle it the way he was supposed to handle it. I'll put it that way.
Well, not the way he was supposed to, and the way management wanted him to.
He went, I think we've talked about this before we went on, but he mentioned that he went back to his alma mater, North Carolina, and obviously he rehabbed. He did rehab.
He was rehabbing, but he wanted to finish his degree as well, because he left a year early.
Yeah. So he did what he had to, but then he decided to start playing games, or at least scrimmages, so to speak. he said I played 3-3, and he came back and told management 3-3 to 4-4. Eventually, he started playing 5-5, which is
they were less than impressed.
Well, they were, because they gave him what, a 10% chance of if he kept playing on it, if he's suffering a career-ending injury.
That's right, and the quote is that this is another good line. Oh man, it's unbelievable how he words it. Like, yeah, Jerry Reinsdorf comes to him and says, okay, it's a 90% chance you're going to be okay. So let me put it to you this way. There's 10 headache pills in a bottle. 9 of them are going to be good for you. 1 of them is going to kill you. You know, are you still willing to take the chance and taking a headache pill? And Michael just comes straight out and said, well, it just depends on how bad the bleeping headache is. Like,
that's so good. Depends on how effing bad the headache is. That's hilarious. Oh, that was so good.
Oh, man. It's just straight up. You're like, oh, man. Like, this guy has just got his passion and willingness is just even then. Do you know what I mean? He's two years into the league and he's just a different animal.
So in saying that, then that segues straight into, I think it was the spring where they the spring of 86 where they came up against I think it was a 65 or 62 win Boston Celtics. They just scraped into the finals, like literally just scraped in.
As he come back, they're just like, you're not playing. Like, and he's just, no, I'm playing. So they end up planting the seeds for 30 years later with load management. And they put him on a seven minute per half, regime. Any second over, then the coach is going to be in a large amount of trouble. And by the end of the season, it was any second over that 7 minutes, and the coach is going to get fired.
That's right. I missed that.
That's insane. And they had a game. Yeah, and they go through it. They had a game. It was only 2 or 3 games left in the season. It might have even been the last game of the regular season. They had that game against Indiana. And he just, for his 14 minutes, he just goes ballistic. And they're still in the game, and there's 30 seconds left in the game. He's reached his limit. He's reached his 14 minutes.
Yeah,
that's it. And the coach is just like, I can't put you in, Michael. I'm gonna lose my job if I put you back in. And he's just like, just effing put me back in the game. Like we can get into the playoffs. I'm not worried about this get into the lottery business.
We can
get into the playoffs. And
this was the other thing. Just absolutely not. Didn't happen.
They were tied, and they ended up having the last possession. And who comes to the party? John Paxson has himself this random little floater down the lane, and that's the game winner. And they end up winning the game and scraping into the playoffs as an 8 seed, or would have been. So guess what? You've got to go up against the Boston Celtics, like, hooray. What a reward for getting into the playoffs. We get to play Larry Bird and Kevin McHale.
So this is the Boston Celtics that had Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, Danny Ainge, Robert Parrish, Bill Walton, like that, Dennis Johnson. They were six monsters, at least 6'6 monsters.
I think they had 67 wins that year too.
Yeah, 60, it was a 67 win season. The first game was sort of, played out how it was supposed to. And then I think it was the second game where...
In that first game, Michael scores 49.
49, yeah. I mean, yeah. It played out like the Boston was always going to win it. That wasn't as memorable as the second game.
Oh, no, God, no.
He ended up going to golf with Danny Ainge the day before... in Boston, and he was having a terrible, terrible game. Michael said he was playing terribly. Danny Ainge was just ripping on him. They were like, he was just feeding him all day and just said, yeah, I'm going to take your money and everything. Cue game two.
He says to Ainge before they leave, which is really bizarre that people like, that they would be playing golf on opposite teams a day before game two.
Yeah.
And before he leaves, Jordan says, tell your boy Dennis Johnson I've got something for him tomorrow.
and he goes out. It's not so much that he scored 63 points, and they didn't win that game.
They still didn't win.
It was that every single Boston player had a chance of guarding him and could not.
And couldn't.
I just, Bill Walton's face was the best when someone said Bill. Someone told Bill Walton he had to guard Jordan. He had this filthy look, like there's no way I'm doing that. Oh, that was so good. That was the biggest turning point of that. Like that was to me the Bulls and Jordan franchise. That was the turning point. That's 63 points. Like they
still a playoff point scoring record to this day.
That they got like I think they got swept. I don't even think they won a game. They didn't win a game. So
like I said, what a reward for squeaking into the playoffs. And I've got a funny feeling too. But if you remember when they put the numbers and everything up there. Chicago's record for scraping into the playoffs was 30-52.
That's right. Yeah.
22 exactly right. Games under 500. Like, are you kidding me? Imagine if they have that BS that they want to do nowadays and they want to have a 9-10 playoff.
So he ended up finishing.
Have a 20-win team. Give me a break.
He ended up finishing with an average of 43.7 points in that playoffs. So. but that Boston side.
It helps when you score 100 plus in the first two games.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just insane. That going to golf and then, I forgot what he said to Danny Ainge.
Tell your boy Dennis Johnson, I got something for him.
And Bill Walton's face was just, oh, my God. Like,
the thing was, too, like, Bill Walton, too, like, you know, when he was drafted back in the day and then he played those years with Portland and he was one of those guys that was sort of injury-prone as well. He was one of the best college players that was getting around. And then he had those really bad, I think he had knee and ankle problems. And by the time he got to Boston, like I think his knees were shot. But everybody knew he was still good and he was still 7 foot. So, you know, he could still not so much dominate the league, but he could still be a very useful player. And he basically sort of, you know, ring chased and went to Boston, got himself a ring, which, you know, good on him. But when it came out that he's got to defend Mike, it's just like that's not happening.
His face was so pissed; it was hilarious. I guess the other sort of the other thing just on the finishing on that second episode, they didn't touch on it, but when Pippen ended up like demanding a trade, like what happened there? Like obviously that didn't go through, but. This was during that sort of when he was berating Jerry Krause. He demanded a trade, and it was all about ESPN and everything. I'm surprised didn't. I think that was the Tracy McGrady trade. Like it was very close. He was very close to being traded. So
they were close to pulling the trigger. I think, and whether or not however many people sort of intervened into that, whether or not Phil Jackson come in and said, look, you know, maybe we should wait. He's a little bit in discontent. Scotty is, Michael obviously would not have wanted that to happen. He would have rather have had Scotty there. So whether or not, there might have been a little bit of player power, and said, look, let's just let him get back from this injury let's let him rehab after the surgery. Let's get him back on the court. And let's go from there. Like, you know, there's no need. I know that Scottie Pippen's unhappy. There's no need to pull the trigger. And whether or not that they might have had to add some pieces in with Scottie Pippen for Tracy McGrady as well. So
basically McGrady said, a lot of people don't know that night Jerry Krause is actually trying to make a trade for me and Scottie in it. So obviously there's probably draft picks in that. And MJ actually acts the whole deal. They said they brought him in for a secret meeting. He flew to Chicago to meet with the guys, and then MJ basically axed it. So you were right. He was drafted by the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah, he would have been Toronto. Yeah,
that was the '97 draft with Tim Duncan went number one, which is again like, oh my god, that was Chauncey Billups went number three at the Celtics. So Keith Van Horn.
Oh my god. I remember Keith Van Horn as well. Love those high socks.
Hey?
He loved those high socks, Keith Van Horn.
He went number two. That was ridiculous. Oh,
and that was the funny, and that was the funny thing too. Like, you know, the San Antonio had always been one of those teams that was never really that great. You know, they had David Robinson there, but they were never really unsuccessful. They have an absolute disaster of a season in 1996, and then what do you know? All of a sudden, it comes up. Oh, look, we get the number one pick, so we're just going to take Tim Duncan.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, but it's just interesting reading that back now that, I mean, MJ was right. MJ axed the whole deal. Like, it obviously worked well, but...
Who's to say what the past of the franchises would have been if that had have gone through?
Well, this is true because, you know, it's Tracy McGrady coming in, and then even if he was learning off... Even if they didn't win that year, but it was learning off Michael Jordan, Tracy McGrady... As great as he was anyway, like, you know, he could have been a totally different player learning under Michael Jordan. Would have been extremely interesting if he went there.
Yeah, so, that's right. Obviously, he doesn't have the defensive prowess as what Scottie Pippen does, but, you know, he could definitely put the ball in the hole.
But then that's, again, like I said, that he fell to number 9 of the Raptors. Again, for the Bulls, the Bulls scouting and management must have been great back then to, like, you know, find these. There's a lot of people that went before Tracy McGrady to find a Scottie Pippen, to find a Tracy McGrady, to find, I mean, Michael was Michael, but still, they, you know, the Bulls scouting and that must have been unbelievable. They would have scouted Dennis Rodman to get him in. Obviously, they didn't do all the trade works, but, you know, like, their scouting was just absolutely ridiculous.
No, that's right. Like I said at the start there, they pulled off the biggest heist on the planet to get Dennis Rodman there. They traded him for Will Perdue. Yeah, Greg Popovich just didn't want anything to do with Dennis Rodman anymore. And he's just like, just get him out of here and I'll take anything. So Chicago's gone, all right, here you go, have Will Perdue. And he's like, right, good, get him out. I don't want to see him again.
So in saying that, the next two episodes that are coming up this week, I'm very certain one of them is at least centered around Dennis Rodman and... if you know of Dennis Rodman,
I can't wait.
Dennis Rodman does, I do know there was I don't know if how much they're going to play into this, but I do know when Scotty came back, he basically said he needed a break because he was in his words sick of playing the nice guy. He had to play the nice guy while Scotty wasn't there, so he wanted a break, and they.
That would have taken its toll on him mentally, something chronic.
Yeah, it did. So he wanted a break to get away, and they said you can have the weekend off. So where does he go? Las Vegas. And I don't know how much they're going to play on that.
Oh, man, I hope that film crew follows him to Las Vegas.
Because I know he was with Carmen Electra back then too, so...
Oh, my God. Imagine the grief. Imagine all the debaucherous things that would have happened that weekend.
The film cameras follow it.
They'll have to change the rating for this one. This will have to be seriously rated R. R for Rodman.
For Rodman. That was the first two episodes. The first was touching on, but the second, it started to get into obviously all the juicy sort of details, but, these next two, everyone's talking these next two up. So I don't think Jerry, speaking on Jerry before we finish, I don't think Rodman had a problem with Jerry at all. I don't think he had a problem with management at all.
I guess we'll find out. But, you know, I'll probably say throughout this whole series that we do on The Last Dance, when he was at the Chicago, he was the ultimate professional. He didn't really ruffle a whole lot of feathers. Like, okay, fair enough. He had his suspensions and everything like that, you know, kicking cameramen in the junk and stuff.
That's what,
like,
I was going to say.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, he didn't miss practices, you know, when he did his things, you know, and he had his parties and everything like that. He was always back. He never skipped out on the team. He was always the ultimate team player. I don't need to be scoring 15, 20 points a game. I'm just going to defend my ass off and I'm going to rebound. And that's what this team needs. And that's what I'm going to give you.
And he did. So, I mean,
exactly.
You love more than anybody. He definitely did. He didn't care about points. Yeah. He could have 0 points. He was all about them rebounds.
There's famous stat lines of Dennis Rodman. I think in the 72 win season where he's had like 21 rebounds and 0 points.
0-20. Yeah, a lot of 0-20 games, didn't he?
I think it's crazy. It's crazy. He don't care. What does he care? He doesn't want no points.
Oh my god, yeah, he didn't want points. He just wanted them rebounds, which is great. Like that's the kind of, to me, that's the kind of player you want as, you know, you want that's as right. a defender.
That's what he, yeah, that's what he wanted. He was given the task of shutting down your best, the opposition's best big man, and boy did he do that well.
And you just had Emse there, so you know he's going to get the points anyway. We've got it. So what, he didn't have to get the points.
Just psychologically, Dennis Rodman would just get into your head, and it just. Yeah, he was amazing. But yeah, that's, I mean, I guess we'll sort of touch a little bit on the man in the next episode. I reckon we'll have
pages of it.
Oh man, I'm gonna have notes like you wouldn't believe, like for this.
Well, that'll do it for the first two episodes. So yeah, there's five part series. Well, sorry, it's a 10-part series, but they're gonna break it up into 5 weeks, which is great because they were gonna do it. I think because of obviously the coronavirus, they were going to do it week by week, which would have been terrible.
Yeah, week by week. Oh, that would have been killer.
So, yeah, I'm glad they've done. They're going to do two episodes over a 5-week span. Clearly, it's working wonders for them, like 6.5 million viewers. So, and Netflix as well. They co-produced it, and they got on the bandwagon, and that's now the number one rated, the number one rated documentary. Come past that Tiger King bullshit and all that. So,
Well, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, Tiger King seems like so long ago. That's like a whole 2 weeks ago now. Like nobody's remembering that Tiger King.
Whatever.
Everybody wants some MJ and Chicago Bulls.
So don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Final Play Pod, and obviously Facebook's Final Play Podcast. Look out for where we have our podcast now. So we've got it on SoundCloud, Facebook, Spotify, Gimco. But you might correct
Podbean. Podbean. We are all over the internet. So we'll put the link up for Spotify.
Click
on the link and then you can follow us on Spotify then, and then these will pop up as we post them. Check us out on Gimco as well. We're on that as well. You can listen to that straight off the page. So yeah, you can check us out on there. Obviously Twitter, you can listen to that straight off Twitter. So yeah, we're infiltrating the internet.
We just hit our 104th like not long ago from Mr. Kane Dampier. So shout out to Kane.
Yeah, Kane.
Don't forget to follow us. And yeah, we've been putting up little bits of like you know, what's going on in the sporting world. Obviously, NRL's coming back. So feel free to comment or let us know what you want and everything. That'd be great.
Yeah, interact with us on the Facebook page there. We don't usually post a lot on Twitter, but if you're on there, give us a follow. But, share it to me. And also share it around as well if you know people that will be into this, into the NRL, into the NFL, into the NBA. Share us around on Facebook, and we'll endeavor to do our best to get some more content out there for you. And this is our life now at the moment, just doing the last dance until the footy comes back.
That's gonna be soon too, so that's definitely locked in May 28th. So I can't wait for that. That'll be at least the first. It'll be interesting to see what else is gonna follow, but. It's some sport. It's some sport.
Let's just give me something. Give me something.
Well, my name's Jason, and I'm going to say Phil Jackson Smith because of how great Phil Jackson was at not only the Bulls but the LA Lakers. So that's a whole different
thing. Oh, yeah, game. Turn it up.
Oh, yeah, whatever. Yeah. You know how good he was there. I know you're going to say it, but go ahead.
So I'm the Miles Worm Plum.
I knew that was coming.
Let's get hyped for these next two episodes because I know I am.
Before we do finish, and I know what you're gonna say, but if you're comparing Phil Jackson Lakers, Phil Jackson Bulls, it is still Phil Jackson Bulls. Don't get me wrong, but you know he really did transform the Lakers too into a powerhouse. He did have, you know.
Oh no, exactly. Well, that's those first couple of years that Shaq went there.
Yeah,
and you know, Kobe was young and everything, and I can't think of who the coach was at. I think it might have been Brian Hill, might have been the coach of the Lakers there before Phil Jackson got there. If you do a little quick internet search, he was either there, he was an assistant, because I'm pretty sure it was Brian Hill, and they weren't a powerhouse or juggernaut by any means. And Phil
Frank
got there.
Frank Hamblin.
Yeah, okay.
Whoever that is. So he only was there for 1 year. So.
But that's what I mean. Like, you know, when Shaq first went there, like, they were still sort of, you know, not so much a fledgling team, but, you know, they were sort of, on the cusp of getting playoff runs together, but they certainly weren't a championship threat.
Yeah. And he's another one that I thought, not only obviously MJ needs this for his legacy, but I think Phil does too, because, you know, if you're knowing your NBA at least, Phil's legacy wasn't that great when he went to New York and tried to change things in the New York sort of New York Knicks.
No, that's right. After his coaching career, like his executive career was with the Knicks was an absolute disaster, and he basically stole $60 million of James Dolan's money. And it's all granted. Okay, drafted Kristaps Porzingis. That's terrific. But you know him as an executive, is pretty ordinary. And the thing is too, you know, Michael Jordan as an executive, like and an owner now of the Charlotte Hornets, it's not great.
Nah, it's not great at all. No, that's true.
This is sort of, but you know, the more in the limelight was Phil Jackson, especially recently.
Yeah.
With his little time with those couple of years, or was it 3 years, I think he was, that he sort of resided over the New York Knicks, but still continued to live in LA and Montana. So it was a total money grab, and he stole $60 million. So, but you know, good on him.
All right, have a good week, everyone.
Yeah, peace out, everybody. We'll be hyped for the next lot of these episodes, and hopefully we'll get them out to you a little bit earlier than the weekend. So
definitely.
Yeah.
See ya.